Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling as they appear on the WWE Network. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is episode number 23. And in this edition, we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic television program taped on Wednesday, June 16th, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and aired in local markets beginning the weekend of Saturday, June 19th, 1982. If you like the podcast and want a little more of it on social media, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod. We update everything when we can, and with most of the focus going towards our Twitter and Facebook pages. As I said, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And if you want to follow along with us as we review these classic episodes, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network at WWENetwork.com. You can also follow along by way of David Taub's write-ups of the shows, which are available over at our friends, themidatlanticgateway.com. And finally, if you'd like to take an alternate look at this week in wrestling history, head on over to MidSouthPod.com, the Mid-South Television Wrestling Review Show with the great Brian Last and Mike Mills, who cover today in Bill Watts' territory on episode 27 of their program. As we begin the show today, Saturday, June 19th, 1982, we have our old standby, our old stalwart, Bob Cottle there, holding the microphone and letting us know what's on deck for the day. But never fear, soon to step into the picture, the full Roddy Piper experience. Here he is to start the show with Bob.
Match, just an outstanding hour of wrestling in store. Speaking of champs, former Mid-Atlantic right champ right here, Roddy Piper.
Jack Briscoe in action. Let me tell you something. I'd like to see Jack Briscoe in action. I'd like you people to see Jack Briscoe in action right here. I'd like you to see him running with his tail between his legs.
You're talking about see him in action. We got a tape of Jack Briscoe in action last week, Roddy Piper.
Well, aren't you efficient?
Let's let all the fans see this and see Jack Briscoe last week.
And Bob was very efficient there, and they did have the VTR queued up from last week's show, which featured Roddy Piper out there. And before I take it to the second part of his interview, I guess we should remind everyone on the devious antics of the Rowdy One, is he had attacked Jerry Briscoe a couple of weeks ago as Jerry Briscoe had Tony Russo tied up in the figure four leg lock. And that was the last we had seen of either Tony Russo or Jerry Briscoe since. He then tried to turn the same tack the previous week here, as Jack Briscoe wrestled Don Morocco, and Morocco had Briscoe in the figure four. Briscoe had reversed it, which got Roddy Piper over from the announce desk to jump up on the top rope, jump off onto Briscoe, trying to injure him. He attempted to hit Jack Briscoe with a chair, missed, ended up hitting the ring post. Big havoc created off of that, a big dented chair, which Jack Briscoe and dragged it over to Bob Cottle later on, cut the promo with the chair just to make sure everybody saw it, and letting everybody know how horrible a person Piper is to want to do that to his head. And here we are this week with a very animated version of Piper, very happy with what he did last week and the panic he's caused.
Yeah, and just something just thinking about that, both Jerry and Jack were in the figure four. So that, or applying the figure four, so that means obviously they can't move. They're pretty much defenseless themselves. So for Piper to strike at that perfect opportunity, I thought was brilliant, you know, to come off and attack a guy that cannot defend himself. I mean, what perfect opportunity for a heel to do dastardly deeds.
And you know what, Roman, too, I'm glad you said that, because it is a subtle elevation in the game, too, because Jerry Briscoe was on the offense. He had Tony Russo in the figure four. He was laid back and had to look up and see Piper come off the top rope on him. Jack Briscoe was involved in a real struggle with Don Morocco, and he finally gets that figure four turned over. And as everyone knows, how do you reverse the figure four? You have to roll over on your belly. It's supposed to cause the pressure to go to the other man. So not only is Jack Briscoe now tied up, he can't see Roddy Piper coming off the top rope to do the devious deed. So it was a step up in the severity of the heelish tactics of the bad guys and the king bad guy, Roddy Piper, who looks like he is going to be I don't want to say a regular on Mid-Atlantic TV, as he has been pretty regular, but a lot of the attention over the last few weeks with Roddy Piper. He hasn't had much of a direct presence. A lot of it's been talked about because of his dealings down on Channel 17 in Atlanta. And after the tape of last week is shown, we get Roddy back to insult Jack Briscoe just a little bit more.
Briscoe in action. That's Jack Briscoe in action. You like that? Eh? I'll tell you something. I ain't asking you for no opinions. I ain't playing no games, obviously. You see, Jack Briscoe? Yeah, it took a chair. Yes, I took a chair and tried to nail you. Your head would have been like the gum that goes squirt, brother. You would have been all over the place. I ain't playing nothing no more. Hurt your little brother. Your leg, your knees are laying all over the place. Your head's been up here against the pole. You got all kinds of things happening here. So what I'm telling you, Briscoe, is simple. Of course I'm nuts. I ain't holding nothing back. You want tag teams? Morocco is my man. You want anything? Get yourself Wahoo. Get yourself Fayette. Get yourself anything you want to do. But the best thing you can do, brother, is take that belt and hand it to me, you see? Because I ain't all there. I ain't going to live to be 30. I ain't afraid of nothing, mister. I go ahead, I eat raw meat, you see? I grab my women by the hair, mister. I go ahead and I'll take a chair and I'll hit you from behind, sucker. So you do the best thing you can. You give it back before it's too late, mister.
Okay, fans, Roddy Piper right there.
Before anyone wants to do the math, Roddy Piper, 28 years old, at least 27 years old. I'm not sure if he had a late birthday or not, but born in 1954, he would be 2 years away from turning 30 years old. He'd make it to 30. He'd make it a long time after that as well, too, the late Roddy Piper. But certainly back to full form, Roman, as not only does he lay waste to Jack Briscoe in the ring. He lays waste to him verbally as well, not mincing any words and being as flat out as possible. Briscoe, this has moved past just wrestling. This has moved past just being insulted. I'm going to hurt you any way I can, no matter how devious it has to be, whether it's in front of you or whether it's behind you with a chair.
Yeah, Piper was at his manic best, and something I like, I swear, it could be like a weekly fashion report or something. The shirt that Piper had, you know, it says Piper Pays Back on the front of the shirt, and then on the back of the shirt it says Pay the Piper. I just think that's cool, you know, some of the stuff he wears. But anyway, just what a crazy statement. I'm not going to live to be 30, you know. And in the wrestling world, we know that how many guys we've lost that just, you know, have barely made it to 40. And it was just kind of a scary statement to hear him say that, you know, but it shows the kind of craziness of him. I eat raw meat. And then he made a statement that probably wouldn't make the air today. You know, I grab my women by the hair. You know, that's obviously not politically correct. In today's day and age, that probably wouldn't have made the air. There would have been all kinds of groups protesting, and just shows like how crazy Piper is. And then the ultimate threat, you know, you better give the title back before it's too late. Piper being Piper.
Do you grab your women by the hair, Roman?
No. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I got to be honest. You know what's even scarier than listening back to somebody say they didn't think they'd hit 30? It's looking in the mirror and being a guy that said, you know what, I'm not going to live to hit 30. And damn, I've got a lot of gray hair. Because I tell you, you know, when you're 16, 18, 21, even 25, when you're all full of yourself and you're feeling good, ain't nothing that can stop you. And you hear, you know, your white blood cell count's going to start going down. And then before you know it, you're looking at the TV and you're wondering, man, maybe Frank Thomas has got it right with the Nugenics. But I digress. We'll move it back to the show. Bob is there, and that's good. Stu Schwartz is there. That's okay, too. And we've got King Parsons in a singles match. Oh, okay, I'm not sure about that. Oh, no. Roman. King Kong Mosca's in the ring.
Yep, he's in a match against the Mid-Atlantic tag champ, Parsons.
Well, here's the deal. We get Bob, you know, during this match because it's a King Kong Mosca match, so it allows the announcer to be able to freeform a little bit and get some other things across, as the action in the ring isn't necessarily very pressing or very high energy to have to deal with. So Bob does get into what I would assume at the time was a very, very unpopular rule. The experimental rule about there must be a winner in every match. He says it as of June 16th. It has now gone to the rules committee. As everyone knows, on June 7th in South Carolina, Wahoo McDaniel was injured. He could not make it to his title defense against Sergeant Slaughter, and because of this rule, Sergeant Slaughter was awarded the United States Heavyweight Championship by forfeit. But, keeping in true kayfabulous ways, Bob does ask that the fans still send in their thoughts and their opinions and to try to get their feedback now that this thing has gone, in theory, to the NWA Rules Committee. It's still, though, no mention at all, Roman, of who contributed the most to Jim Crockett Promotions in the year of our Lord, 1981.
I was going to say, Mike, they could kill three birds with one stone. They could write to Briarwood, put in their vote for who contributed the most, say they want a Mid-Atlantic bumper sticker, and then say they want the must-be-a-winner rule to keep going on.
I think one of the big losses about the fact that we're getting the master tapes with the guys walking out to fill time to do interviews with Bob, and basically most of them doing practice interviews and spots where local interviews would be airing at the moment. We've lost Big Bill Ward out there pimping the bumper sticker to all of those fine people in Southern Ontario and across Michigan and Western New York, the home of Mike Rotundo and the home of Mid-Atlantic Conference Wrestling, as we discussed last week on the show. And, you know, I'm doing the best I can to try not to talk about Angelo Mosca. I mean, Bob did as well, too. He recapped the Piper and Briscoe feud. He brought up the fact that the Privates were going to be teaming up with the Monk later on. And as we'll find out on this show, the Monk playing this was very Memphis in some ways with the Monk on this show. But long story short, and it felt like a lot longer than 5 minutes and 35 seconds, which is what the match time went, King Parsons was pushed out of the corner by the referee, and we've seen this in Angelo Mosca matches before. Things are getting as hot and as heavy as they possibly can get, and they're trading fists in the corner, and Sonny Fargo ducks in there, and he pushes Parsons away out of the corner, and we end up getting Mosca delivering a short elbow strike to the head for the KO. He didn't even load his elbow pad at any point, didn't do the fake adjustment or anything like that. No, we're just supposed to deal with the fact that Angelo Mosca knocked out a man with an elbow, which doesn't make anybody look good. It doesn't make Mosca look good as a heel. I guess as a tough guy it does, because he's got an elbow that can knock you out. But, I mean, it makes Parsons look like a goof, because that's just an elbow he could have got hit with in the middle of the ring. Why did he have to get pushed out of the way? Why not have some sort of devious tactic? Why am I talking this much about Angelo Mosca, Roman? Why?
Well, there's one thing. You know, last week I talked about how he got hit in the stomach and then moved his head up and down 500 times like a bobblehead. He did something in this match that was kind of head-scratching or whatnot, that Parsons is laying on his back and he lifts both his feet up and kicks Mosca. Then Mosca yells, "He has grease all over him." I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand what Mosca does in the ring. It makes no sense.
Yeah, the grease comment, you know, would have, like, been fine if, like, Parsons had been slipping out of a headlock or they were doing some sort of chain wrestling where Mosca couldn't get a grip on him. It made no sense.
I agree 200%. Like, I was thinking the same thing. A side headlock, he squirms out of it. Then you could say that, but after you get kicked, you yell, "He has grease all over him." I don't know.
And I don't know what the formatting was for this show. I'm not sure exactly what was cut out, but you get a herky-jerky feel when you're watching this show on the WWE Network, because once this match is over, they cut it to break, and it's not exactly I don't think that was a smooth transition. And this happened several times during the show. The show comes back, and immediately the action is in the ring and the bell is being rung. And this match, we get Jack Briscoe and Juan Reynoso in a non-title match. Briscoe, obviously, the Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion. And match does not go a long time, goes 3 minutes and 15 seconds. Reynoso immediately went after Briscoe's injured left knee. Does not stop Jack Briscoe from getting the victory with the figure four leg lock. And, you know, as soon as that match is all wrapped up, we went right to the bell for the next match. And again, you know, there was no break. We didn't get a throw out to break or anything like that. In this case, it felt like they had an interview. They had a pre-tape. They had something that was there. But why they abruptly cut to it and why the editing is so jagged and they go right into the next match when we come back, I have no idea whatsoever, because it didn't feel like there was a commercial break there. I don't know what it was, but it felt odd. And maybe I'm overthinking that a little bit too much, Roman, but what did you think about that?
Not at all. It felt almost like a compilation or something, you know, instead of a show. It's like, let's just throw a bunch of matches onto this episode, or I don't know. Yeah, it had a weird kind of flow, but you know, something I wanted to talk about on the Briscoe Reynoso, like I thought it was good that, you know, that Reynoso came out aggressive going after the injured leg. They were trying to tell a little bit of a story there, but I thought it was kind of weird that Briscoe would go for a flying drop kick. If you've got a bad leg, why would you want to kick? I just thought that was a little weird, and he missed it, and then he no-sold it. He got up, he backstropped Reynoso, and applies the figure four for the victory. And I don't know, I just thought if your leg is injured, you wouldn't go for a drop kick, and if you miss it, wouldn't you want to maybe sell it for a few seconds? That just kind of jumped out at me as far as that match goes.
Well, and on top of it, why would you go with the figure four of the Indian Deathlock? Even though you're known for those moves, you are Jack Briscoe.
Right.
And you could have done, you know, some sort of back suplex or something like that. And people would have, felt the exact same way and not missed a beat. It would have just been, Jack Briscoe beat him with a different move. You know, we like this move now. So I agree with that, because it was not a great selling exhibition by Briscoe at all, even though, I mean, he did labor a little bit, act like he labored a little bit when he had him in the figure four. But yeah, when you look at everything in totality there, you know, it's a surprise they didn't go in a little bit of a different direction with it, especially because the story of the match was being told with Reynoso going directly after that leg.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, I was thinking the same thing, you know, with the figure four. I mean, let's face it, Jack Briscoe knows a million moves. You know, he's not a one-trick pony. So, like you said, he could have, you know, done something different, you know, to put him away. I just thought, you know, not trying to be too critical, but we're here to talk about the matches, and that was something that jumped out at me.
Yeah, no, I think they showed the replay, and then that was it. And you know, Bob just – and that's the story of that match. And then, like you mentioned, as soon as that happened, we cut right to the bell, you know, highlight style for the next match, which is Ron Ritchie and Rusty Roberts facing off against The Ninja and Ivan Koloff. And this is very interesting. As we've mentioned, Dory Funk Jr. is in as the booker for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And Jim Crockett Jr. and Eddie Graham have long had a relationship. Long story short, at ringside, we've got a new manager in the area. And this is where I will drop in the first bit of commentary, as Ninja and Ivan's manager was circling around the ring, and Bob wanted to reach out and find out who this man was.
Ivan Koloff and Ninja came in. They came into the ring with a manager in the ring. I don't know what these two guys need with a manager up there, as wild and as mean and as rough and as tough as they are. And he's walking around here. Let's see if we can get a microphone right here. Find out who this gentleman is and why he's in the corner.
Who this
Ninja.
Gentleman is Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and I'm the greatest wrestling manager in the world today. And what I'm doing here, my friend, is looking out for the interests of a couple of the finest athletes that I've had the pleasure to be associated with in many years. And I'm talking about the Russian Bear, Ivan Koloff, but in particular, the great and mystifying Ninja. Now, Ninja's had a lot of problems around here with guys like Jimmy Valiant, Jay Strongbow, Wahoo McDaniels, and the list goes on and on and on. Jack Briscoe, but I'm here, my friend, to make sure that he gets the break he deserves, make sure he's treated with fairness and dignity as he deserves.
Ninja hasn't had the trouble. It's the other wrestlers with Ninja.
That's exactly
with that
right.
Spray that he puts in their eyes, some illegal something he's been doing, almost blinding some of the wrestlers.
If you think there's been trouble before, wherever I've appeared in the past, Mr. TV announcer, one thing has followed, and that's pandemonium and total wreckage. And I'm here to do just exactly that. Ask Jack Briscoe about me. I've been around Briscoe a long time, and he knows exactly how ruthless I am. I'm here for one thing, and that's to make sure that my men are treated equally. In every professional sport today, there's professional people taking care of them. I'm taking care of wrestlers right now, and I'm going to make sure that they get everything that they deserve.
Roman, there we hear from him. Here comes the Rooster, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, a Florida mainstay. I don't know at this period. I guess his work in Florida, probably by that point, even though I don't think he as a manager would have been as synonymous with Florida as, say, a J.J. Dillon or somebody like that. Humperdinck as a manager throughout the Southeast, as the manager of the fabulous blondes of the Hollywood blondes of Jerry Brown and Buddy Roberts in the 70s, certainly got a lot of magazine play, may have been best known for that, but in the next upcoming couple of years, his star would really shine from Florida, being tied up in all sorts of things, not the least of which was with Kevin Sullivan. And, you know, as a little bit of an aside here, as I think about it, you know, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but we get Jake Roberts around this time starting to turn a little bit darker. And you'll hear him mention later on today that the snake is coming out of him and that Ninja, with his by injuring him, has brought something out of him. And from this point on in 82 here, we get Jake Roberts, who goes to Florida, and he falls into that dark side. And he never comes back out of that dark side, whether he be in Louisiana or in Dallas or in the WWF. And Kevin Sullivan, the collapse of Knoxville and the Jim Crockett-supported Mulligan Flair Knoxville territory is rapidly coming to an end. And while Kevin Sullivan is still nationally known as a babyface in Georgia at this time, that would begin to change in a feud with Steve Kern. We have the incredible story that gets told in Florida with Steve Kern and with Mike Graham and with Kevin Sullivan that ultimately turns Kevin Sullivan to a heel, that you never look at Kevin Sullivan the same way again after what he does. And we have that going on. Now we have the explosion of Sir Oliver Humperdinck. We have Roddy Piper kind of hitting on all cylinders at this point. This point, Roman, I just, as an aside, as a pivotal point in the, I mean, King Parsons from this point rapidly improves in a short period of time. I mean, it just some of the names we've seen go through here: Terry Taylor, Don Kernoodle. Once given the ball, you see where Don Kernoodle's doing now, and it's like this is such a pivotal point with what a lot of these guys have coming up very soon. And Jay Youngblood, who comes back, we'll get into him. This is an amazing point.
Yeah, and there's so much talent in Mid-Atlantic that you can almost get spoiled by it. You know, when you think about the people who were there when we started doing this podcast who are not there right now, you know, the Wyndhams, the Austin Idols, and, you know, and Mid-Atlantic's still going strong. You know, Hanson's not around anymore, Ole, but, you know, they just had such an amazing array of talent of people coming in and out, and it definitely made for some fun times.
Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen. Ole Anderson, who helped build Mid-Atlantic to get it to the point where it is right now, along with Gene. They just stopped mentioning him. They bring back Jimmy Valiant and Ivan Koloff onto the TV show. Roddy Piper, who has been off of it, they reinforce it with that. And it's like nobody even noticed. And I'm sure, look, people noticed, obviously. The tag, obviously, people knew, you know, something was amiss there, but they just thought Ole and Hansen, because of the faith that was built up with the company, oh, they must have won the belts, and now they're in Georgia. And we got all this going on, so we don't care. And any move that was made, any person that was lost, the person that came in was huge, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck was filling a void that was, frankly, really, Roman, being left open by Gene Anderson, which, with all due respect to Gene, because of the physical state that he was in and the fact that promo-wise, there was a reason that Ole did all the talking for the team, you know, especially after he had his stroke. You know, this is a great time for any manager, not the least of which is Sir Oliver Humperdinck, to come striding in here.
Well, especially if you consider the fact he said he was there to make sure that the Ninja got treated fairly. Now, the Ninja's not going to cut any promos. So if Humperdinck is with the Ninja, that makes sense. You know, Humperdinck was good on the mic. He liked to talk. So it made sense if they're going to push the Ninja to have a mouthpiece for him if Humperdinck's going to be involved with him.
And yeah, they had, for a minimal period of time, because Ole had left and the change was taking place. Gene, you know, took a step back. He was still obviously in the territory, helping out, training, working as an agent and wrestling and being there in a part-time basis, but he took a step back, and he was the one that had been tied up with the Ninja, trying to do the talking for him. They just stuck Ninja with any bad guy that they could on promos for a while to kind of wander around. You know, in the last few weeks, it seemed to have been Angelo Mosca. But you could see this week, like, you know, and we'll talk about it a little bit later on. I mean, the Ninja looked revitalized, not only in the ring, but certainly on promos. Even though he's just out there wandering around and everything, he actually seemed to have a little more pep in his step. And having Humperdinck there by his side, being a guy that is designated to hype him up, I think is really good. And again, it takes him on a path away from Ivan Koloff, who has been tied up with the Ninja too, because even though everything's going to be tied together a little bit here, Ivan and Valiant is one feud, and Jake Roberts and the Ninja is another feud. So all that talk, and we haven't even talked about the match, and Rusty Roberts being the guy wearing the funny colored shirt on Star Trek, he was going to be the one that was going to be killed off in this match. Ron Ritchie has been somewhat protected, at least on television, on the lower card here, being mixing it up with Sergeant Slaughter and other people now and then. And the story of the match was Roberts struggling to make the tag, which he ultimately does. Ron Ritchie gets the tag, comes in like a house of fire. That lasts for just about 1 minute exactly. And he's able to force Ninja to tag Ivan, and he's on the attack briefly, but Ivan shoves a knee in his gut. Ritchie just kind of limps back to the corner, tags Roberts back in again, who's already blown up, and he gets dusted after another Koloff knee, and tags Ninja in, who jumps off the top rope with a flying headbutt, and that's that. 6 minutes and 47 seconds, and most of this match, while it was Ivan Koloff and Ninja out there thumping away, a lot of it was really made to set up for Hump on the mic, getting himself over and introducing himself to the people.
Yeah, and good for Ron Ritchie. You know, the other day they gave him a shot, letting him do a run-in to clear the ring, and then here he gets the hot tag, and the crowd was, like, really behind him. But like you said, it didn't last long. Ivan Koloff cut him off with the knees to the midsection. And, yeah, it was the debut of Humperdinck, so they explained why he was there. You know, like I said earlier, it makes sense for him to be with the Ninja because, I mean, I would rather hear the Ninja talk than Mosca. You know, the other week it was Ninja and Mosca together. I'm guessing Ninja's English is probably better than Mosca's.
So next up, we get the Native American contingent of Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel out there in a pair of, looks like Adidas track pants and a pink, and I mean a pink, Izod golf shirt. Would be Hustle George Bush Sr. Well, and Ernie Ladd when he had that shirt on golfing in the Midlands somewhere or something like that. But Wahoo's back, not fully cleared to wrestle, but the date has been cleared. In a couple days, he'll be able to get in the ring again. And you know, basically, Roman, what this promo was about was Ric Flair and the fact that Flair was going to be in the area. And obviously, everybody, one, the tape is on a loop, and two, not everybody was going to be able to get a chance to see Ric Flair wrestle anybody. And they showed a clip from May 23rd in Greensboro where Ric Flair was all bloodied and he intentionally got himself disqualified against Jack Briscoe. They then show another clip where time runs out of on Florida TV of Wahoo McDaniel and Ric Flair wrestling down there with Tommy Young as the referee. And I mean, that's kind of what it was to get across. It was able to serve two masters, though, in that it allowed Wahoo and Briscoe to talk about the perils of being a champion and to talk about how the championship can change people, which also tied into both of their feuds. One with Roddy Piper and Don Morocco helping Sergeant Slaughter get back the United States title by injuring him. And obviously Piper's jumping on Jack Briscoe with Morocco and trying to injure him. That's basically what this whole promo comes down to. And before I get into it, Roman, here and play a little of it, do you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, something I took away from it, I thought it showed that Flair could be vulnerable and maybe be beaten. Just the way how they showed Flair bloodied, trying to leave the ring, and Briscoe bringing him back. And then in the Flair Wahoo clip from Florida Championship Wrestling, you know, when you watch the clip, Wahoo was taking it to Flair till they started rolling the credits. And it just kind of, to me, planted the seed like, you know, Flair's days could possibly be numbered. He's going up against some of the best, and they were both taking it to him in that video package.
And, you know, Briscoe is a champion right now, but it's another, you know, it's good for Wahoo's reputation as well, too. Not like it would take a hit to anybody or anything like that, but, you know, all of the lead up into the swerve of what was going to happen that people didn't know about because of the oldie situation. And, you know, it was never going to be a long-term thing. Don Morocco turning on Wahoo McDaniel was very possible, and that would have made the most sense and allow Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen to win the tag team titles. That playing itself out seemed like it would make sense. It seems as though because Ole had his falling out and left and was going to take the titles, and Hansen was going to do, you know, whatever Ole, you know, wanted him to do, and what was best for business for him was just obviously not come back from Japan, which is what he did, and he followed Ole to Georgia. But I think because of that, you had to do something, and they pull the trigger on Slaughter, and they decide to go in that direction, and allows Morocco to be jealous, and they tell the story that way. The build-up to that was Wahoo kept beating Sergeant Slaughter. And here's the second time in the span of, 9 months? Where Wahoo McDaniel has been screwed out of the United States Heavyweight Championship via injury that was brought on by nefarious means, and because of a wacky rule, he loses the title. And a way to try to add some salve to that wound, I think, was here he is with Ric Flair. Here he is, not only as people will hear in the interview, talking about the fact that I can beat Slaughter again. I just have to have another match against him. I've been beating him. You know, I didn't even know I was losing the title. I've been beating this guy, and oh yeah, look what I'm doing to Flair right now. I have him on the run. That was a very good way to, you know, remind people that, hey, we got to build Wahoo back up here a little bit too. And, you know, he's a threat to get that championship back, but I don't want to do their whole promo for him, as it's going to be in two parts here. As I said, they show the videos of May 23rd in Greensboro. Briscoe and Flair will obviously fade out on that. And we'll also fade out on the Wahoo Flair match from Florida, which Wahoo comments over, and we'll just get the main parts of what they're talking about here.
Fans of ringside, a pleasure to have with us Jack Briscoe, Wahoo McDaniel. Wahoo, first of all, good to see you back after being injured, I tell you. We were a little worried about you there, Wahoo.
Well, you know, it's good to be back, and I'm just thankful, one thing, that I am healthy, and my leg's in good shape, and needs a little work on it. And it just goes to show you what a belt will do for people, you know, like Slaughter, like Piper, like even Flair with the world's belt. Some of these guys, you know, they'll do anything to keep them. And I guess that's the attitude you have to have. And sometimes, you know, I don't like to hurt people to try to keep something I've got. But I guarantee you, my attitude is changing because I spent a lot of time in the hospital lately.
Okay, talking about champions and talking about matches, Jack, you and Wahoo both have wrestled the world champ. And we got some film and we got some tape of those matches.
Well, it'd be very good to see him because, like Wahoo stated, it'll show you how a guy's attitude will change in order to defend the belt and especially the world's championship belt.
Against him.
Wahoo, it's a tremendous match. Just look at you guys trading those blows there.
Well, you can see it. It's always, anytime you're wrestling the world champion, it's going to be a tremendous match because a lot of money and time is involved.
I tell you, that, as you say, that sort of proves what happens to a man when he gets that belt sometimes, Wahoo.
Well, you know, it's very funny. I could stand here and scream and cry over spilt milk. While I was in the hospital, the NWA official came to my house, took the belt, you know, and it's like I told Jack, it was really kind of funny. 4 days I laid in the hospital, I didn't even know I wasn't the U.S. heavyweight champion. They'd taken the belt and give it back to Slaughter. And this had a lot to do with the rules, you know. Must be a winner, no count out, no time limits. It must be a winner. So 4 or 5 matches, I was hurt. I could not wrestle. They gave him the belt. I could be hot. But the thing is that I'm happy that I have got my health. And Jack, I'll tell you, nothing is more important than your health. And I can win the belt back.
Jack, you've been that world champion.
I've been there, Bob, and I know exactly where the pressure is on the champion because I am the champion right now, and I know how people's attitudes change towards the championships. You know what Roddy Piper has done to try to eliminate me from the scene, but he hasn't been able to get the job done. He's hurt my brother. Now I'm in a knee brace. Wahoo's hurt. He's hired that beach bum Morocco. You know, they'll do anything for the heavyweight championship belt or the mid-Atlantic championship, and I've got it.
Fans, and that's it right here ringside.
So there we hear from Wahoo McDaniel and Jack Briscoe. Roman, Wahoo at one point in that interview, it was towards the end where he's talking about, you know, all that matters is you got your health. It just there around that point, if people go back and watch, he gives a look to the camera, a crazed, it's almost like, and it's unintentional, I guess, but it's one of those where it's like, if you're following this in storyline form, and he's looking like directly through the camera, and if you were deep into this and really behind Wahoo, you would think that he was thinking about killing Sergeant Slaughter and killing Don Morocco and Roddy Piper for injuring him and possibly wanting to kill people at the NWA for being so dastardly and low down. Sandy Scott, did you have anything to do with this? Did you have the nerve, the audacity, the gall to go to Wahoo McDaniel's house as he is laid up in the hospital to hand that belt over? Not only, Roman, did we get Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel showing some superiority on Ric Flair, we get some sympathy on Wahoo as well, too, for the dastardly way the NWA went about screwing this poor man over again.
Well, if you think about it, storyline-wise, you know, it's amazing how calm Wahoo was, you know. Originally, he was supposed to be in the tag team tournament, was supposed to be one of the favorites with his good buddy Morocco. Wahoo wins the United States title, supposed to be one of the happiest moments of his life. He's going to be the instant number one contender to the NWA championship, and then he's got to deal with jealousy and anger for Morocco. Morocco, his buddy, turns on him, hurts him. Wahoo ends up in the hospital, so he's lost his friend. Now he's injured. He's in the hospital. He still thinks he's the U.S. champ. And while he's in the hospital, somebody goes over to his house and takes the belt from him and gives it back to his enemy, Sergeant Slaughter. So Wahoo really went through like an emotional ringer in a short period of time. And to see him that calm kind of makes you wonder, a little teaser, like, I just don't think he's going to stay that calm forever.
Xanax and big, tall glasses of vodka. Good lubricant there. Hey. Maybe it was the pain medicine for Wahoo being laid up for so long, missing all those matches, but not so many matches where he wouldn't be back next week. That's the one thing that they kind of made sure to say on this show is, you know, don't worry, Wahoo's going to be back in wrestling again this week. Because on the, you know, on the obviously they got to play the story out. So they, back in the good old days, they would announce matches and intentionally not follow through with them, but they would have reasons for this on TV where you would get substitutions. And I'm sure you were thrilled to hear about, maybe you get Sergeant Slaughter supposed to be facing Wahoo for the title, and you instead you get, you know, Mike Rotundo in there. You know, he was one of the replacements. Would you be okay with that as a fan if you got Mike Rotundo in there instead of Wahoo McDaniel?
Not at that stage, no. You know, Rotundo didn't even know it was a wrestling alliance. He was still calling it a wrestling conference. You know, at that stage, I would have been disappointed. And just like a few weeks ago when three of the four guys in the tag match were not there because they got stuck in Canada when they were supposed to have the conclusion because there must be a winner, I would be a little ticked off, you know, to be honest. I mean, I know it's card subject to change, but three quarters of the tag participants were not even in the country. You know, that's something that would have bothered me. So stuff like that, it's like you want to feel like you're getting all the bang you can for your buck.
Well, and then they couldn't follow through because in its entirety, because Jake Roberts, in theory or in storyline, was
exactly
hurt by Ninja. Because, and I didn't match it up. I don't know if Jake Roberts was still working up in Toronto or if he did a stint somewhere. I never matched that up to see exactly why Roberts was out. And it may have just been, you know, some days off or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what it ended up being there for why he wasn't there. But, you know, here's the thing about that rule going away. I mean, look at how it started off with the privates and Terry Taylor and the Canoodle Taylor stuff. And it's like, well, okay. Like the possibility of this rule was cool because it's like, man, these matches could keep going on. And again, I don't know if they intended on doing this in the way that they did it, or it just worked itself out in storyline form because of how they used it. But, you know, obviously people were going to be pissed about Wahoo, and that, I guess, would have been the icing on the cake regardless, as far as people thinking this rule probably sucked. But, like, look at how they paid all of that stuff off that originally was the privates and Terry Taylor, where you end up with Johnny Weaver and with Mike Davis in a match that goes through commercial breaks that David Crockett stopped. And then they have an interview. It's like, you know.
With Mosca.
So could this rule be any worse? Like, I'm about to write a letter now to Briar Ben to Ashley, just retroactively to say, I just talking about it, I just realized how horrible that thing, how whole thing ended up being. My God.
I've got some extra blood pressure pills, Mike. If you need to take some, I can ship them out to your house.
Now I need Wahoo's glass of vodka in the Xanax there. And I tell you what, whatever did take place after that interview, there was some abrupt editing in the WWE Network version because, as we mentioned at other points on this show, immediately after the interview, we get a clip. We don't go, hey, we're going to break. We don't get none of that. We get right to the bell for our next match, which is Keith Larson and David Patterson. And this was guys got to wrestle on TV. And David Patterson is at that point, a mid-card, sneaking into the mid-card guy, a NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champion contender, Keith Larson on the come up. They've been utilizing him at points. I think he had gone over the border to Tennessee, I think, for a while. So now he's back here. And bottom line, this match was in the ring to give them some time on TV. But the real reason it was on was to give Bob a chance to talk about all of the storylines and kind of push everything forward. And he got a chance to talk about Ric Flair coming back to the area, as we had talked about a little bit earlier on. He got a chance to mention that Greg the Hammer Valentine would be returning. He also brought up Sir Oliver Humperdinck's appearance in the area and the upcoming six-man tag team match a little bit later on, once again with the Privates and with the Monk. And, you know, it seems to be that Mid-Atlantic is taking some pride, for whatever reason, in their six-man division all of a sudden. I don't know if that's because Ole and Hansen are gone or whatever, but all of a sudden now the focus is on some hot six-man tag team matches on TV every week. And of course, he brought up the trial period ending for the new rule and that going to the Rules Committee, June 16th being the date that got sent off. And as we mentioned, now it's the new bane of my existence. So Keith Larson missed a no-look flying crossbody off the second rope after he was whipped into the buckles. Just whiffed completely. Peterson stepped out of the way. Larson flipped over just because he was young in his career, and he just rolled over. And Peterson dropped a knee drop to his head, and 4 minutes, 47 seconds later, that was it.
Yeah, at one point, you could actually hear a couple people cheering for Patterson. You heard, come on, David! But
yeah.
Then when he got the victory, you didn't hear those people again. So that was kind of weird. But yeah, like you said, it was just a match to have Cottle explain a few things, talking about how active Flair is, you know, because that was the World Heavyweight Championship. And back then, the World Heavyweight Champion traveled the world. So he made a point to let you know that Flair's traveling the world. So basically, when he comes to the Mid-Atlantic area, be ready. Go to the arena and see him, because eventually he's going to be in Japan, or he's going to be in this territory, or, you know, wherever, world class, Mid-South, he's going to be all over. So I thought that was kind of cool that he mentioned that Flair was a defending world champion. But a match to give the guys a little more time, and wasn't a horrible match, but Cottle said what he needed to say.
It was now time to take time for this commercial message about the Mid-Atlantic events taking place in your area, but we don't do that. And instead, we get Sergeant Slaughter's two privates with the Monk just hanging out, working the stick with Uncle Bob. Ugh. At points in this promo, both he and Nelson, once again, play the lowest common denominator card, which was very common at that time. Again, didn't make it right at that time. Doesn't make it right now. It was the cheapest of heat. And we have the Privates and the Monk, who has got to explain his existence of being there. And Roman, I guess before we get to this, anybody, I guess, can hang out and do interviews with Nelson and Kernoodle. And the funny part is that they, at times, it seems to be, we've talked about their safety in numbers, they will usually send out three guys of lower stature to do a promo, which is not unusual in the span of 2 minutes. Sometimes, like, we get Piper, we get Mosca, and we get Koloff. And what they'll do for these localized spots is they send three guys out there to do 2 minutes. But when you have Don Kernoodle, who started wrestling, I believe, in 73, 74, You know, he's 8 years into his career at this point, and Nelson's getting his first push, and Kernoodle's getting his first push, and he's cutting promos in the way that he is with the enthusiasm he has. Why, of all the teams, why of all of the people, why would you keep throwing a third person out there to distract from the fact that Kernoodle and the Marines are getting themselves over and, in turn, obviously, helping to get Sergeant Slaughter over?
A little bit of a break on this one. At least they were teaming with the Monk in this episode. Whereas in the past, when they had Juan Reynoso out there for just no reason other than Reynoso, just to clap at something they said, at least they're teaming with the Monk. But yeah, I agree. They are a good up-and-coming team. They are, at this time of the taping, Mid-Atlantic champions. Or I'm sorry, they're not former Mid-Atlantic Tag Team champions. You know, they really don't need that third person there. You know, let them grow on their own. You know, I agree. They should have done it by themselves, but at least they're teaming with the Monk this week, and it's not just some random dude out of the blue that has nothing to do with them at all.
Now, it's funny, as we're going to get to a little bit later on, but, you know, at the time that this show is being aired, the Privates actually are the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions. And basically, on the 17th, this show was taped on Wednesday the 16th. On Thursday the 17th, at Roanoke, the Privates beat Cash and Parsons to regain the title, which, because this was on TV, and, you know, in many parts of the area, people were not going to know that Cash and Parsons were not the champions. It was probably going to take them a little bit. So, you know, they never mentioned. Last week, they obviously have Parsons out there wearing the title. Here at a time where a lot of people are still thinking that he's the champion, before that match with Mosca, it was never referred to him as the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champion, or the fact that he was, you know, had no belt on whatsoever. That was just kind of brushed under the rug there, and that's a little piece of tidy housekeeping now that, unfortunately, a lot of wrestling promotions have long since got away from, you know, doing that sort of I-dotting and T-crossing. But without any other further ado, we have the Privates, who are angry and at this point screaming that they are confident that they are going to get back their NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championships.
As we're going to see them in action in a six-man match in just a moment, Privates, Private Don Kernoodle, Private Jim Nelson, the Privates of Sergeant Slaughter, and a new one to team with him, the Monk right here. Monk, how in the world do you happen to team up with two guys like this?
I get in with the best when I get in, and I'm here, and I'm with the best.
All right, Don Kernoodle.
You know, the Monk, he hadn't been that long, but he's exactly right. He knows who the best are, because Private Nelson and myself are the best, and so is Sergeant Slaughter. By the way, I just got a call from Sergeant Slaughter upstairs there. He's laying over in Hawaii with his United States belt that he just won back. He's sitting over there with the Hawaii girls, having a good time over there with the hula girls, admiring his belt. And I'd like to say that Private Nelson and I are very proud of Sergeant Slaughter, and we are very proud of his accomplishment, winning the United States Heavyweight Championships twice. Let's get back to business hand now. That's enough for Sergeant Slaughter. Okay, we're not worried about this match we have on TV right now, a six-man tag team match. All matches are important, but what we really want to think about is our Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship. Back around our waist where it belongs. Those two boys have come in here and stolen from us, and that's exactly what they are, boys. And I'm looking at you, Porkchops and King Parson. That's what I mean, boys. And we're coming in here, and we're going to get our belts back once and for all, and get them around our waist where they belong. Right, Private Nelson?
I believe it. The two Hershey Bar boys, as far as I'm concerned, plain and peanut. All I hear everywhere I go is King Parsons and Porkchop Cash. How they embarrassed us on TV, where every dog has his day, Cash and Parsons. Sergeant Slaughter took us to camp. He said, you boys ain't got no guts if you don't get those belts back. You do what you have to do to get the belts back. And that's what he did to Wahoo McDaniel, Sergeant Slaughter. He hurt it. He hurt your knee, didn't he, Wahoo? How does it feel to be hurt? How does it feel to have been the hunted? Now you're the hunter again.
Poor Wahoo McDaniel's out here with his knee all wrapped up like a little Indian boy that he is. He should have known better than mess with Sergeant Slaughter, because we treat Indians all the same, just like they are. But like I said, you know, Wahoo's come down here crying and all that, but Sergeant Slaughter's happy to be United States champion. June's going to be the month for us, because we're going to win our Mid-Atlantic Championship belts back right here in June.
Private Caruddle, very confident that he and Private Nelson would win back the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship away from Cash and from Parsons. Once you've already won them, you are confident in saying that you did. So easy prediction there. I guess the one thing you can say about it is it could have been more racist, but Nelson, and maybe I would put a little too much on Caruddle there, in that, you know, you hear him start off by saying boy so much and the extra English that he puts on it, and it's like, man, that's cold. And then Nelson comes on there and talks about the Hershey Bar boys. Then you throw back to Caruddle, who it seems like that the boy has got a little bit less effect when he just keeps using it. It just seems like when he's stuck and he's got nothing else, it's like Hulk Hogan saying brother. Boy, you know, he was from Burlington, North Carolina, so I'm sure his mama and his grandmother put the boy on him a lot. So maybe it's not as bad as I think it was, but it certainly wasn't good.
No, but it seems like everybody in that segment was called a boy, no matter who it was. Caruddle used it for Pork Chop and Parsons. Nelson said Slaughter called Nelson and Caruddle a boy, and then they call Wahoo a boy, and I'm like, there's got to be at least one man in the group, you know, like everybody was called a boy. And like you said, they used that phrase 900 times in that promo. But something that kind of stuck out with me is the Monk here. He finally gets a little interview time. He said he wants to team with Winners, and then Caruddle gets on the mic and basically says, we're not worried about this six-man match. That had to make the Monk feel real good.
See, the Monk is the man, brother. He's the man of few words. And actually, you know, if we needed more Monk, actually, it could not. I was telling Nelson started to falter at the end, and Caruddle made sure to jump in there because it seemed like maybe Nelson was supposed to cut it off, and he took Carnoodle's talking point of talking about Wahoo, and he was, now you were the hunted, and now you're the hunter again. And Caruddle kind of like was quick to jump in there, but then he was so manic and like, we treat all Indians the same. We treat you just like you are. Like, well, I mean, in the case of Wahoo, it's like just a low handicap golfer who's incredibly successful, pretty great hunter, amazing athlete. You got Jack Briscoe, pretty amazing athlete. Jay Youngblood's back. He's got incredible hair and charisma. So, I mean, I don't know how you're treating them like they are, but they're all looking pretty good in the Mid-Atlantic territory. And finally, that
can rock that pink shirt, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know how many people that probably if God bless them, that I don't know why any of them would know about the WWE Network, but say you were a fan from back in the day and you had that black and white TV. I mean, you actually had no idea whatsoever till this day that Wahoo McDaniel was in the hottest of hot pink, so hot that Boyd Pierce's patches on his jacket were a little bit surprised by it. That's how pink that shirt that Wahoo was wearing. And I don't know what hospital he was laid up in, but it had a hell of a beach because his tan was gorgeous.
maybe that's where Brett got the inspiration to go with the pink tights and the pink singlets or whatever. Maybe he saw Wahoo rocking the pink.
It stands out. Hey, maybe Wahoo was the impetus for Neon becoming the thing in the 80s. You know, after that, like, Neon became the big thing. It blew up everywhere. We finally get the match. Sergeant Slaughter's Privates and the Monk against Paul Jones, Jake Roberts, and Jay Youngblood. Paul Jones has been obviously talking up feuding with Angelo Mosca. He has put himself in Jack Briscoe's corner. Jack Briscoe has needed a partner with his brother being injured. They used Paul Jones for a while. Jake Roberts now back from his injury suffered at the hands of the Ninja that we saw where the green mist was blown in his eyes before Jimmy Valiant was able to come in and get a win in a tag team match that also featured Ivan Koloff. And Jay Youngblood, hasn't been much mention of him. We hear that Greg Valentine is coming back to the area. He was in the WWF. We hear Ric Flair is going to be coming into the area to defend his NWA World Heavyweight Championship, but where has Jay Youngblood been? Well, Jay Youngblood was in All Japan Pro Wrestling along with Ricky Steamboat and Stan Hansen and many, many others, and being a part of the Excite series, and that took place between May 14th, 1982 and June 10th, 1982, and There were, Roman, as another small aside, some really interesting matches on this show. We got a NWA International Junior Heavyweight Championship, and I'm sure a lot of these matches are out there since they taped everything and in such high quality. At Sushi Onita against Jay Youngblood in a match that went 10:33, which, you know, the 1982 version of Onita, much different from the famous version that FMW and that he would make famous in crazy, crazy matches. But Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat, 30-minute draw with the High Flyers, Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzell, who were also on the card. I mean, can you imagine that? There was Akio Sato and Atsushi Onita against Youngblood and Steamboat. That went to a 30-minute draw. There's at such an early point in his career, I believe there's a Misawa match. Yeah, it's Misawa and Shiro Koshinaka losing to Youngblood and Steamboat in 13:47. I mean, some great matches. And then also including guys like Tenryu, names like Jumbo Tsuruta, and of course, Giant Baba. I mean, just some hell of a tour for Youngblood and Steamboat to be on and come back. I mean, at that level, working that level of wrestling, and then to come back into a hot territory that is just, you know, needing heroes right now. I mean, my God, perfect timing for them, you know, these guys to come back.
Yeah, and just you talking about that, Steamboat and Misawa in the same ring. You know, they did that in 89 when Steamboat was the World Heavyweight Champion and went over and defended against Tiger Mask when Misawa was that version of Tiger Mask, and just two legends. And just the thought of them in the ring, would have loved to seen them have a series of matches. And for those of you that don't know who Misawa is or anything, do yourself a favor. Look him up on YouTube. The guy was just absolutely phenomenal.
Roman, what did you think about this match? Because it was and I didn't even get the match time on it. I got so invested in it. I mean, it was a banger of a six-man. And, you know, I kind of joked about the philosophy of them seeming like they want to have a hot six-man on every week. But, hey, you know, in any era, you get six guys in there who are really good or able to tell a story or have something going on in between each other, either as a tag team, all singly, some sort of intertwining storylines going on with each other. I mean, it's going to probably be good stuff, and that's kind of what they have here. Even though the team is kind of a mismatch, you know, makeshift team, it is eras of fan favorites. You know, the old fan favorite who has broken your heart and then made up with you again, Paul Jones. You have Jake Roberts, who has been the hero for a while. Now you have the other returning young hero in Jay Youngblood, as Jake Roberts, as we'll find out after this match, is starting to turn a little bit more sinister. And you have him going out there with the Monk, who has been, I guess, really not built up as a big deal, at least to the home viewer, with him being mentioned so much as being in the main event with the Privates. You know, they're trying to put some shine on him. And, you know, I mentioned at the beginning, it felt like a Memphis type of thing. And it's like, no matter who would come into Memphis, like in other territories, guys would be afraid about guys who sucked, you know, exposing the business. You know, everybody had such confidence in Jerry Lawler that you could bring in anybody. One of the more famous ones that everybody knows is that everybody, you know, took the pass on the Ultimate Warrior and Sting as Power Team USA. And Jerry Jarrett looked at him and went, okay, we can try it. And they brought him in there, and they had him in there with Lawler. They had him in there with Dundee and with Phil Hickerson. And even they couldn't do anything with him. But, you know, you would always bring a gimmick to the table against Jerry Lawler right off the bat. And if they lasted, they lasted. If they didn't, they didn't. Usually they just changed masks. And they went from a New York assassin to a something else. And that's just how it worked. And that kind of felt like that's what they were doing with the Monk here. You know, they kind of build him up so he can be the sacrificial lamb here when it came to the Privates not losing.
Yeah, I like this match, and I'll tell you why. Because like I alluded to earlier, you know, Carnoodle said he wasn't worried about the six-man match, so he kind of like foreshadowed a little bit with that. And like you said, you have somebody like the Monk that doesn't have the experience. He's not being pushed. So if you look at it logically, you figured he would be the fall guy in this contest. But it was still a real good contest. I mean, the crowd really was into it. They were supporting the baby faces, and every little move the crowd was into. I mean, there was one point where Carnoodle was going to come in illegally, and the crowd shrieked. They were, no, no, no. I mean, they did not want him to come in illegally. You know, they were like trying to warn the ref. They cared what was going on when Nelson had Youngblood in a headlock. immediately the crowd started cheering for Youngblood to get out of it. There were no boring chants, or they didn't milk the headlock. The crowd was like rallying behind Youngblood. And to me, that makes a match fun when the crowd's into it. I mean, I know it's a small studio crowd. There's not that many people and everything, but just they help make that match. And then, like you said, you got three popular baby faces with Jake, Youngblood, and Jones. They all got their time in the ring, lots of quick tags. Everybody got to do their thing. And this was a good match. It was very fun to watch, and I enjoyed it.
And this match also then at the end suffered from the rigid editing society, and we have a point where they're showing the replay, and then again, as if they were clipping to a new highlight on SportsCenter, they cut right to the post-match promo. Almost felt like it was, if somebody else, I don't know if somebody else was out there and cutting a promo, or I have no idea. That's what it felt like, was they were talking to somebody else. Somebody was there, and they then just cut to Paul Jones with his arm around Jay Youngblood, and it felt like an obvious edit here. But here are the illustrious and the victorious fan favorites, a little out of breath, but with something to say to everyone.
Come on in here, Jake. Listen, it's great to see Youngblood back.
For you three guys, Youngblood, it is great to see you back. But that six-man match up there just really was. Those privates. I tell you, I know you had it in for them, Paul.
Yeah, that's right. But you can't sell a private short. I mean, they're very dedicated men. They stuck behind Sergeant Slaughter. I wouldn't want Slaughter as my leader, but they're very dedicated. And every time they lose a match, they catch it from both ends. It's just like when I was in school. You know, when I get a spanking, I get it first when it's school, and I get the second one when I got home. Right. But I tell you one thing right now, I'm awfully proud of Snake. Snake's back after his minor injury, and Jay Youngblood.
I'll tell you what, I've been in the Far East on a Japanese tour, and I still say the Mid-Atlantic and the worldwide wrestling area has the toughest competition in the darn world, and I mean
Amen.
It sincerely.
Amen.
There was an example right there. The Monk, Private Canoodle, and Private Nelson. But now, it's getting down to the dirty nitty gritty. Sergeant Slaughter, the Beach Bum, Don Morocco, and you, Roddy Piper. Well, brother, now you realize that you're surrounded by nothing but Indians. You got myself, Jay Youngblood. You got the great Jack Briscoe and the great Chief Wahoo McDaniels. Brother, now let's see you fight! Just like you put the Chief out, he's back on his feet, and he's here to stay. Morocco, Slaughter, Piper, I want you guys to remember that. I'm behind him, the folks are behind him, and you guys remember that.
All right, Jake, Rob. Jake, as Paul said, it's great to see you back after that injury to your eyes, Jake.
It's very good to be back. You know, I'm not going to come out here and do a whole lot of hollering and screaming because that's not the way I feel inside right now. Canoodle, Nelson, and Monk are a good team. We took it to them and we beat them. But I'll tell you something. I didn't come back to wrestle Canoodle, Nelson, and Monk. Something had happened to me, man. You know, every man in his life is going to have a turning point. He's going to have some spot that something happens to change him on the inside. Well, I guess it's happened to me, brother, because I tell you, I've went cold on the inside. And I know there's only one way to serve up revenge, brother. Everybody's a fine cook. Mama can make grits and mama can make biscuits and gravy. But the only way you can serve up revenge is to serve it cold. I tell you something, Ninja, you hurt me and you hurt me bad. And you made me feel even worse inside because now I know what kind of man I really am down deep. I am the Snake, and when I bite, brother, it's going to be nasty.
All right, fans. That's-
hey, I know that Jake Roberts. I know that guy. I've heard that before. That's a more familiar version of Jake Roberts that I grew up with, Roman, a couple years down the line. I heard he drinks certain things, but I'm going to let the great Brian last stay with that one. But a little bit of an ominous turn there for Mr. Roberts.
I wasn't sure where he was going with that at first. I thought I was listening to Julia Childs or Rachel Ray, whose mama makes grits and gravy, but she doesn't make tuna casserole. I wasn't sure where he was going. But when he finally got to the point of he looked inside himself, and he saw a snake, and when it bites, it's going to be nasty. That was the Jake, like you said, the Jake I knew that had a little something in his eye, that little chip on his shoulder. I guess that time he had off from when the green mist was blown into his face, it made him do a little soul searching, and I think you're going to see the real Jake Roberts emerge. The Jake Roberts we knew, the Jake Roberts that was incredible to watch, that cut some of the best promos in the history of the business. So to hear Jake talk like that, that got me a little fired up.
And I got to be honest, I kind of like that little rap that he threw out there about, you know, how you know, mama can make grits or whatever it was, and I'm not going to do it any justice, but, like, you know, but revenge is served cold. And, like, he went from that folksy, you know, hitting you with that folksy, dusty type thing, and then just brought out the fact that I did soul searching, and now I'm thinking about Ninja killing you. You know, it's like, yeah, it's
he
his version of,
yep.
I guess at this point, his version of Ivan Koloff telling Jimmy Valiant manically that he is going to kill him. No, Jake Roberts is taking a far more cerebral approach. And much like we are now getting with Jay Youngblood calling it out, we are getting a rowdy Roddy Piper. We are hearing that nickname now come into effect here a little bit. We're hearing Jake the Snake Roberts a little bit more, because even though it's mentioned in passing sometimes, and obviously his look will be the reason that they'll say it, and they'll talk about the knee lift striking and things like that, Jake Roberts as Jake the Snake, the menacing type, has not happened yet, and now we're starting to see it here. And again, like we mentioned earlier on, at this point with Jake Roberts, once he goes to Florida, it's game over. You know, we never see that good rallying cry Jake Roberts again. Even if we see Jake Roberts as a good guy, it's like seeing Randy Orton as a good guy in today's times. And no matter what he does, you know there's always a chance that he could strike, and he's always a bad guy for life. Ric Flair, the exact same way. So now that we've taken this turn on Jake Roberts, much like Kevin Sullivan and some others, man, Florida, they did some things down there, didn't they? Good Lord, Dusty. A transitioning of times here, and certainly a transitioning of times with Dory Funk Jr. coming up as the booker. And Roman, as we look into next week's show, any final thoughts that you have on this week's episode and the direction that the company is taking and the focus it's now taking, the Youngblood coming back in the area? Steamboat's going to be coming back into the area here, as we talked about. Valentine, Flair, stalwarts, names that we know. Ole Anderson going out, Hansen going out. The tag team titles now out of focus. How do you feel about how things are maneuvering as we enter the hot days of summer?
I like this episode, and I like the way they're moving. It's always a good thing when Steamboat comes back. One of the greatest of all time, no doubt. Piper and Jake, two of the greatest promo guys in the history of the business, both going to start cutting promos as heels. The stuff they did with Wahoo, the Canoodle and Nelson, Slaughter, the new U.S. champion. There's a lot going on, and it really is a credit to this territory. Like I said earlier, just how many people that have left, you know, the whole who contributed the most, the whole world tag title, all the stuff they didn't really follow through with like they should have. But it's still a strong territory. It's still something that I want to see. I want to keep watching, you know, and I think that's a credit to them. They have a lot of stars. And don't forget, Flair's going to be popping in. You know, I mean, it's just there's always somebody right around the corner that's ready to come in. And it's a good time for Mid-Atlantic.
Absolutely crazy. It is absolutely crazy. And what they definitely had going for them was their association up in Toronto with the Tunnies, because as all of this stuff is flying high down here, you have all of that goodness taking place up there as well too, which those shows then, you know, got the extra bonus of being able to be filled in with WWWF championship matches on top with guys like Bob Backlund and, you know, names that, you know, everybody knew, whether it be Angelo Mosca or Greg Valentine. Even if he was up in the WWWF at the time, he could still be featured on those Toronto cards. And so there was always, you know, something good going on. And this is a very important point. And again, as we go through 1982 into 83, and certainly into 1984, the atrophying and the change in the product and the change in how Mid-Atlantic is presented, well, it as I mentioned, it brings a lot of changes. But we'll go ahead and wrap up the show there, as we will get into these results, and there are a ton of them. We start off June 17th, Harrisonburg, Virginia, the Harrisonburg High School on Thursday night. We don't have any results, but Jay Youngblood and Paul Jones faced off against Angelo Mosca and the Ninja in the main event. Also that night at the Norfolk Scope, Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff, Wahoo McDaniel defeated Sergeant Slaughter. And as we mentioned earlier on, Private Nelson and Private Canoodle defeated King Parsons and Pork Chop Cash. On the 18th in Charleston, South Carolina, at County Hall, Wahoo McDaniel defeated Sergeant Slaughter in a Canadian Lumberjack match. Angelo Mosca and the Ninja defeated King Parsons and Pork Chop Cash. Also on the 18th in Wilmington, North Carolina, at Legion Stadium, no results for these matches, but Jay Youngblood and Paul Jones faced off against Private Canoodle and Private Nelson. Jimmy Valiant against Ivan Koloff in a chain match, and a main event, probably for the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship, of Jack Briscoe against Roddy Piper. The next match in Greensboro, North Carolina, at the Coliseum, saw Jimmy Valiant defeat Ivan Koloff by disqualification, and Don Morocco and Roddy Piper defeat Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel by disqualification. The show, scheduled for the 20th in Kingsport, Tennessee, at Dobbins Bennett Dome, was canceled. The next night on the 21st in Greenville, South Carolina, Memorial Auditorium saw Jack Briscoe defeat Roddy Piper in the main event. In Raleigh, North Carolina, at the Civic Center, Jack Briscoe defeated Roddy Piper in the main event there. On the 22nd, no wrestling was held in Columbia, South Carolina, at the Township Auditorium, but it was held in Sumter, South Carolina, at the Exhibition Center, where we saw Jimmy Valiant defeat Sergeant Slaughter by disqualification and Jake Roberts defeat Ivan Koloff. Once again, as I mentioned earlier on, if you like this show and want more things related to it, you can find them via all of our social media. We have all of it, but we update Twitter and Facebook the most. Just search Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. Please support all of the shows here in the extended 605 family of podcasts. We don't condescend, and we are dedicated to preserving and accurately archiving wrestling history. And I'm happy that this podcast, executive produced by me, for the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, can be a part of that. For Roman Gomez, I'm Mike Sempervivi. Take us out of here, Uncle Bob.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.